9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hurricane Idalia bears down on Florida. Plus, Europe's biggest economy is sliding into stagnation, raising alarm beyond Berlin.
A lot is at stake in Europe because essentially Germany is the main economic player here. It's not a time for Schadenfreude.
And 3M settles up with veterans who alleged its earplugs caused hearing loss. It's Tuesday, August 29th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Tropical storm Idalia has strengthened into a hurricane and is churning toward Florida, where emergency preparations and evacuations are underway. According to the National Hurricane Center, the storm is expected to develop into an extremely dangerous Category 3 hurricane before it makes landfall on Wednesday. Governor Ron DeSantis has declared a state of emergency across many of Florida's counties and urged people not to ride out the storm. Idalia is said to be one of the first major Atlantic hurricanes of the season and comes just a year after Hurricane Ian killed at least 140 people. The board of 3M has agreed to pay $6 billion to veterans who allege that its military earplugs caused hearing loss. Journal reporter Bob Tita says that payment will resolve a historic mass tort that saw 3M face more claims than any single company before it, including over issues like asbestos exposure, opioid sales, or wildfires.
For the veterans, the settlement gives them some compensation for the damage to their hearing. And for 3M, this was a case that been hanging over the company for a number of years. It allows them to move forward with some certainty that a big chunk of liability has a price tag on it.
The $6 billion settlement amounts to substantially less than the $10 to $15 billion that some analysts had expected. And natural gas prices are set to rise further after workers at two Australian natural gas facilities run by Chevron said they'll walk out next month amid a disagreement over job security and pay. Journal reporter Rhiannon Hoyle says the labor dispute is raising the risk of disruptions to global gas supplies going into the winter, given that the two facilities alone account for roughly 5% of global LNG.
This is part of a wider dispute that had appeared to be partially resolved at other facilities in recent weeks. But this decision at Chevron is really intended to ratchet up the pressure on the company in ongoing negotiations there that are yet to be resolved. This has been a big pain point for gas markets over the past few weeks, showing how volatile gas markets remain, despite the fact that in Europe, gas storage facilities are nearly full. So the union can elect to call off any action before September 7 if the ongoing talks yield a resolution in the next few days. The problem is union officials are signalling a deep divide between what Chevron is offering and what the workers there want.
Coming up, the industrial powerhouse of Europe is sputtering. We'll look at why Germany's economy is stagnating and how politicians there are struggling to turn things around after the break.
Want to get smarter about investing? Then tune in to the Capital Ideas podcast from Capital Group, home of American Funds Distributors, Inc., one of the world's leading asset managers. Each week, we bring you stock market outlooks, macroeconomic updates, and investment strategies that can help you succeed. Learn from portfolio managers with decades of experience about how they navigate uncertain markets. Prepare to be engaged, enlightened, and entertained by listening to the Capital Ideas podcast today.
Germany is set to be the world's only major economy to contract this year, according to the IMF, with even Russia, saddled as it is with sanctions, forecast to grow. And unlike 2 decades ago, when Germany cooked up an economic reboot to become a manufacturing powerhouse, there's a growing sense in the country now that orchestrating a repeat of that turnaround may be out of the question. Journal reporter Bojan Panchevsky is in Berlin, and he joins me now to explain why that is and what this could all mean for the global economy. Bojan, why this sense of doom and gloom?
Well, Luke, it's a cyclical kind of process that Germany goes into every 2 decades on average. And essentially, it has been too successful for too long. Businesses have become complacent, especially the large international corporations that we all know, like Volkswagen or BMW, the car makers, or Siemens, the maker of electronic goods, or BASF, the chemical giant. So they've all done terribly well in the past 15 years or so, and now they're not doing so well because the world has changed and they're still pursuing their same old business model.
The world has changed. What world was that before, the one that sort of gave Germany so much economic mojo 20-odd years ago?
Well, first, the obvious things. There was no inflation. Inflation was extremely low, and interest rates were at a record low, which produced a huge kind of financing boost for all sorts of businesses. So that has changed and is not coming back anytime soon. Another obvious thing that has changed is the war in Ukraine, which has pushed energy prices up and has cut off access, possibly for the long term, that Germany had to cheap Russian gas that powered its factories and warmed their households. And of course, China is changing. And this is very important for Germany because China is one of the main trading partners of Germany. And China used to basically be a huge conveyor belt going one way. All the goods from Germany were going to China, and China was happily investing into everything coming from Germany. Now it's the other way around. The Chinese have become producers of the things that Germany makes. So now, essentially, one of the best clients of German industry has become one of the most fierce rivals, even in car making. Chinese electric cars, for example, are now on sale across Germany, and they are putting pressure on the German car makers who were kind of snoozing on the job and didn't take on seriously the challenge from the electric vehicles revolution.
Bojan, the last cyclical economic reboot that Germany underwent was in large part driven by politics from then Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder. So why then is there a sense now that reforms, deregulation can't be turned to again as easily as before, maybe?
Well, indeed, those were different times. It has to be said, Germany was in much direr straits at the time. It was genuinely the sick man of Europe, whereas now it really is not. But Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder was pretty much the last chancellor who was extremely willing to reform the country. And he pursued this very painful reform agenda at the time, cutting welfare, trimming the budget, opening up markets. And so he was willing to risk his own job, and he lost the election as a consequence of that reform. Now we have a situation where a three-party government is in power, and they have very different diagnosis of what's wrong with Germany and extremely different prescriptions of how to cure the malady. So Germany has become difficult to govern, essentially, because there is too much plurality in the executive branch, and that is due to a political fragmentation, which we are seeing elsewhere in the world as well.
And Bojan, whether Germany can pull these political groups together and execute an economic reboot is obviously of concern to Germany, but what about for Europe, for the world? What is at stake here?
Germany is the world's fourth biggest economy. It's by some margin the biggest economy in Europe. It is a global engine of growth. And it is the European industrial locomotive, if you will. So basically, most countries in Europe, especially in the East and to an extent in the North and around the neighborhood of Germany, they're all integrated into the German supply chain. So it's very difficult to imagine what would happen if Germany would really trip economically. Now, obviously, everyone hopes that Germany will reform and that eventually it will overcome the current stagnation. The assumption obviously is that they will sort themselves out. But the question is how quickly and at what price.
And it seems to me, Bojan, that when you mentioned political fragmentation earlier, that is something also that resembles other countries around the world, including the US.
Well, that's the thing to bear in mind. And it should serve as a disclaimer to any kind of stories about Germany being the sick man of Europe. Many European, comparable European nations would be only too happy to have the problems of Germany. If you look at Britain, they have really structural, political, societal, economic problems post-Brexit. If you look at Italy, they're in the doldrums. Spain is not doing that well. France has its own problems. So Germany, compared to its own standard self, is in decline. It needs to be said. These problems are relatively mild, but because Germany is so important, so seminal to the economic development of Europe and political, people are paying attention.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Bojan Panchevsky in Berlin. Bojan, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Luke.
The European Union should expand and accept new members, including Ukraine, by 2030. That's the message from a top EU official and marks the first time that Brussels has set a target date for potential enlargement. European Council President Charles Michel said the EU should make a bold move in the face of Russian aggression.
At our next European Council meetings, we will take a stand on the opening of negotiations with Ukraine and Moldova, and I also expect Bosnia and Herzegovina and Georgia to be back on the table. Maybe more painful than reforms, but it's necessary. And there is no room for past conflicts within the EU. And young people, especially the young, they want to be inspired by a brighter, fairer, more prosperous future.
Serbia's Prime Minister Ana Brnabic welcomed the prospect of establishing a time frame, but said Serbians were growing impatient with the EU.
You know, we've been waiting for more than 20 years. All of us have been doing different kind of things and still finding it difficult to even get a day to start negotiations. When you look at Serbia, from the point when you start negotiations, which in our case was 2014, 10 years have passed. You're still in negotiations. So to get a day to start negotiating actually means nothing.
Keeping passengers on the tarmac for hours on end has cost American Airlines $4.1 million. The fine by the U.S. Transportation Department is the largest ever penalty for tarmac delays in the United States. Authorities reported that passengers on 43 American flights from 2018 to 2021 were stranded on the tarmac for over 3 hours in violation of a decade-old federal rule. American Airlines attributed the delays to rare weather events and has apologized to affected customers. Utility Hawaiian Electric is denying responsibility for the wildfire that destroyed Lahaina and caused 115 deaths, instead blaming Maui County firefighters for an inadequate response. The statement comes in response to a lawsuit by Maui County that accused Hawaiian Electric's power lines of causing the August 8th blaze. The company says its power lines had been shut off for more than 6 hours that morning after some of its power lines fell in high winds, causing a blaze that was extinguished by firefighters before 2 p.m. A new fire then began shortly after, though the company didn't indicate what might have caused it. And the world's number one EV maker has posted a more than tripling of its first half profits. China's BYD also reported a near doubling of sales from the same period last year, leading it to expand its share of the country's new energy vehicle market to more than one-third, and said that it expects EV penetration rates to hit new highs later this year. And finally, imagine you're back in elementary school. The lunch bell rings, and in the cafeteria, they're serving Lunchables. Yep, the savory meal kits for kids could be coming to a school near you thanks to a recipe revamp from packaged food giant Kraft Heinz to make a variant of its pizza and turkey and cheese Lunchables comply with federal nutrition guidelines. WSJ Food and Ag reporter Jesse Newman told me that Kraft Heinz sees a potential $25 billion market in so-called education food services and is pitching the easy-to-prep Lunchables as a way for cafeterias to save on labor costs, though the pitch does have its naysayers.
You know, many kids know about Lunchables. They're sort of a coveted item that's traded around the cafeteria. And one of the big concerns is that schools are sort of giving an implicit stamp of approval to a branded product, which then could drive kids to want to buy it at retail. And then it's really confusing for families who parents may think, oh, all right, great, my kids are being served Lunchables at schools, they must be pretty healthy. And then they go to retail and what they buy at retail is a different version. So, you know, isn't held to the same nutritional standard. And of course, that is part of Kraft's strategy. They hope that this will drive retail sales.
And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. Additional audio in this episode came from Reuters. Today's show was produced by Mohsen Ali. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff, and I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back tonight with a new show. And until then, thanks for listening.
Technology can make the world better. At UST, we're building a future where people everywhere are empowered to live better lives.
It's transformation you can feel.
And you don't have to do it alone.
We believe in the power of technology to transform businesses and build a better world.